Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the shift with Dez and Katie. Two generations, 2 points of view coming at you. It's the shift. Stand by.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the shift.
It's Katie Boyle and
Dez Bishop. Katie, you're shaking your bed there. You got your computer on the bed. You're shaking.
Yeah, I have it on the bed. I'm not a huge success yet.
There's such an excited intro there.
I wanted to do the way you do it. You know, you're always like, hey, it's Dez.
I'm Dez, and this is Katie. Hi. So anyway, we got a great guest today.
We do.
Dr. Caroline West, who did her PhD in DCU. She focused on women in the porn industry, but she talks a lot about porn. She does a lot of interviews on Irish media about porn, discussions about porn. We talk about consent too, and just need for sex education. So it was a great chat. Katie, anything else to tee up?
No, enjoyed the app. She was really amazing. It's really informative. I learned a lot.
And we'll be back after the app. Dr. Caroline West, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I got to be honest. Awesome. You're the guest that we've needed for like a long time.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Stop. My head will explode through my earphones.
No, because you know why, and I'm sure you know why. A lot of people just make sweeping assumptions about porn, and it happens a lot, and it's always well-meaning, including us. But everyone, when they make a statement about porn, assume that there has been a ton of research done behind it. And from what I'm reading about you, you're basically sort of saying that we really don't know yet.
No. Well, there's some research, but it's so bad. It's like, here, we survey these 5 kids, and therefore, like, all men consume porn in this exact same way. And it's just nonsense. Or else they'll, like, bring them into a room, show them some porn, and then go, now, how do you feel about women? And it's like, that's not how people watch porn on a normal basis. It's like, and also, are you going to really, as a 15-year-old or whatever age, they'll be over 18 doing the studies, but are you really going to say to a researcher, actually, I hate women and I want to go rape everyone now? Like, most people are not going to say that. So that's not going to be an accurate reflection of what's actually going on in their minds. So yeah, the science around it is just really bad. And then there's people, you know, who maybe claim to take a neuroscience approach, and it's not really neuroscience as well. And
oh, really?
Yeah. And then there's like class, gender, race, age, everything to throw into the mix as well. So like most of the studies are done on like middle class white American college students. So that's a very specific demographic. And for ages they were like, no, women don't like watch porn. We don't need to study them. And people were like,
maybe you need to broaden out the thing. Yeah. So before we get into that, both myself and Katie, I'd like to know, so what happened in college? How did you end up sort of focusing on porn? You did your PhD on porn, or you did your PhD on sex education?
No, on porn, on women's experiences working in the American porn industry. So
right.
Very specific. Yeah, I did a master's in sexuality studies as well. So that was like a more general kind of porn, sex. I get the two mixed up so much in my head now. Education. So, but that in that, I was like, oh, we're talking about porn, but it's only talking about it through like anti-porn. Porn is bad. Porn is awful. And if you watch porn, you're a rapist and, you know, all this stuff. And I was like, I don't think that this is quite accurate. And then we weren't actually listening to anyone who worked in porn. We were listening to like really well-paid, very middle class, upper class, white, rich white women who are making a living off campaigning against porn. And I was like, right, this is a bit ridiculous. Like, this isn't right. So there's like, at the, I think at the time, something like 3 or 4 studies done that actually spoke to the porn performers. And a lot of those were like, maybe, you know, a bit out of date at the moment by then, or maybe they'd written autobiographies, but it was a very small example. And it was all this time going, oh, they're all abused, or they're all working in these kind of conditions. And I was like, well, you don't know that. How can you actually make those assumptions? And, you know, the assumptions of like, oh, if boys watch porn, this is the exact way that they watch it. Like, it just seems like ridiculous. Like, that's like me saying to you, Des, well, I know how you watch porn, and I know what you watch, and I know what you
really
want to do.
Really, don't tell anybody.
That's for like
it's
the
a secret
only.
Yeah. That's for the Patreon. Like,
bonus content. No, but that's, and like for Katie, I'd be like going, oh no, you don't watch porn because you think all porn is evil and violent and everything else. And it's like, well, we know that's not true. You know, like, people watch porn in so many different ways, and people have so many experiences working in porn, and there's so many ways to work in porn as well. And, you know, some of the women that I interviewed were, they're amazing hustlers. They were like directors, they were on OnlyFans, they were selling their pants for like $200. And I was like, okay, like, this is awesome. So we don't get to see those, you know, different aspects to working in porn when you're only going, were you abused? How exploited are you?
Yes. Oh, I mean, that is one of the big narratives. Yeah, that comes out.
Yeah. There's no research to say that. There's one study that was done in, I think it was 2012-13, that looked at where women in porn sexually abused as children. And the study was really poor, in my opinion, because it was like the third question in, it was like, what's this, were you abused as a child? And it's like, Jesus, that's really harsh to ask someone that kind of question. And they didn't really define what sexual abuse was as well. And as we know, that takes, you know, a variety of forms, and people don't necessarily name them. And I wouldn't want to tell a stranger, oh, by the way, I was sexually abused as a child, and have that information used to campaign for my industry to be closed. Yeah. You know, so.
And also, did they do the matchup between what the percentage of people is in just everyday society when you ask that question?
Yeah, but in a really poor way. So they spoke to some students again, and then they went to an airport and asked people, hey, by the way, were you abused as a child? Now, me in an airport, I'm either, you know, going to a wedding or coming back from something, or in Ireland, you're going off for an abortion. You're not really going to want to answer such personal questions. And then they were given, the women in the control group were given the opportunity to leaf through the answers to see. So they're asking questions like, how many people have you slept with? And if you're probably leafing through and everyone's like, oh, two people,
yeah,
you're not really going to write down like 150, you know, because you don't want to be caught out, and, you know, you don't want to worry about like that kind of stigma. So, you know, that's kind of a problematic approach to it. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So, like, you have that one study, and as you know, problematic as it was, they still said porn performers had lower rates of childhood abuse than
is that right?
Airport. Yeah, but again, it's like, you throw a stone and you hit any industry, and there's people who are, you know, have suffered sexual assaults. So, you know, yeah. I don't get this focus on porn performers. You know, you, like, every industry, sadly, has people in it who've been sexually abused. And I mean, we see the conversations with comedy scene at the moment, and the sexual assaults are there. So it's like, this is a societal wide problem. This isn't like, oh, you're abused, therefore you're going to make, you know, you're going to go on into porn. It's like a human experience, which is sad, but yeah.
Okay, I have a lot of questions, but Katie, I want to throw it over to you. What are your thoughts right now?
Oh, well, no, I'm just like learning loads. Because, well, firstly, when you were saying, oh, I presume it'd be wrong to presume you don't watch porn, but I don't watch porn just because I'm so new to the world. But because I would have been kind of brought up thinking that it was a little dirty. And so doing this podcast has been great because I'm like learning so much more from the guests and stuff. But one thing I did research before this was from a psychology article today where they said that porn does have, that they found a study that it led to sexual dissatisfaction. Can't say words bigger than 3 syllables.
But dissatisfaction.
And is that something that you, so I know you're talking about the porn industry, but do you have any knowledge about that in relations to people watching it?
I think those studies are, again, they're usually like really small sample sizes, as most studies are. You know, mine was small as well. So you can't necessarily say, so we don't know what the questions were. You know, we know the headline, oh, porn causes sexual dissatisfaction, but how do they measure that?
Yeah.
You know, and also it depends on like how you're watching it. So if you're watching it with a guy who's trying to pressure you into watching it or saying, come on, let me copy these acts here. And then you're not an athlete, you know, you're not able to have sex upside down or whatever way they have it in porn. Like, of course you're going to be dissatisfied. And if you have body issues, if you feel bad about your body, and then you're watching these like amazingly in shape people, you may feel bad about your body. And then it's easier to go, oh, like porn made me feel bad, rather than address all the shit that's going on in your head all the time, and your own sexual hangups, your own sexual dysfunctions, your own body image, all those things. So it's too complicated. Like, sex is messy and humans are messy and porn is messy in more ways than one. So when you add all those things together and you try and make this like tiny study out of it, like, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, like, yeah, you know? And that's what I like.
It's clear that these people, they all, whatever agenda it is, whether they want porn to be positive or negative, it's clear that they have a statement that they want to make, and they're going to look for the information that allows them to say it. Doesn't that seem to be the case often?
Huge. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you look at the studies on sugar, when it's like, oh, sugar isn't that bad, and you find out they're funded by Coca-Cola, and it's like, okay, you know, or like that butter is bad, and that study is funded by someone who worked in a different industry than butter, yes. You know, and so things like that. So you have to be really conscious of like who's funding these studies, who's making money off them, who's enhancing their career by publishing them, and you know, and
then people have agendas too in terms of you know, forwarding their debate.
Absolutely, you know, and there's a lot of people who want to close down the porn industry, and yeah, mainstream porn has a lot of problems. You know, there's consent issues, but name me an industry that doesn't have consent issues, you know, sadly. But you know, and there's a lot of money to be made stoking people's fear about sex and people's fear about porn, because porn is unapologetic. You see everything. You know, it's sex in graphic, close-up, unapologetic detail. It's someone having a gangbang and going, fuck it, we're having a gangbang, you know, without like that Irish Catholic guilt of shame around sex. So it scares a lot of people, and it forces people to confront a lot of their own feelings about sex. And we're really bad at having conversations about sex, you know, like, Des, you're a blow into Ireland, you know, but you saw like how bad we are when you come over and you're like, okay, we're so repressed. And
yeah, because I was a repressed Irish American, but I looked like feckin', I grew up in a hippie commune when I came to Ireland compared to the things that Irish kids have been taught. I mean, I'm 44, it's different now, but there was no conversations around sex. No,
and like, we still miss that a lot because our sex education is so poor. So we don't have the language to even speak about sex most of the time, whether it's good or bad, especially good. You know, we talk a lot about the bad side, but we don't talk about how to give someone like multiple orgasms, or did you like that? How do we go for it? You know, we're really stunted sometimes when it comes to sex. So of course we're a bit weirded out by porn because we can't handle it sometimes.
Okay,
you
well,
know?
Yeah, so I really do want to talk about the porn industry, but I want to park it for a second and go back to it, only because my cousin Sinead Gibney, I don't know if you ever come across her, but she got really into the porn industry, and she got into some Icelandic study which was very negative about the porn industry. But I want to come back to that, okay? Because I have a lot of questions about that too. But just in terms of what you just said, what would you say, just your own personal opinion, you don't even have to back it up with science, but just in terms of your studies, what would you say are the positives of porn before we get into the what you perceive as the negatives?
I think for some people, it can actually enhance their sex life. So there is some research, again, small, that says if you're watching it as a couple and you're both into it, it can enhance your sex life, because you can say, hey, you want to try that? Okay, let's go. For other people who maybe live in areas where they can't either access a sexual partner or someone of their own sexuality, you know, if you're in small town Hicksville, Alabama, and you can't find you know, in your gay man, you can't come out because it's not safe, you can watch gay porn and it's safe, and you can still have a bit of sexual enjoyment even if it's not safe to do that in real life. So that's always a positive. And the same for trans people as well. It's really good, I think, for opening up conversations, whether they're negative or positive, of going, oh, I don't want to do that, but I might try do something like that. So, but it's not meant to be sex education. So you have all those, you know, different battles, I suppose, going on one side. And the positive side as well, there's so many different types of porn as well. It's not just what's on Pornhub. Like, expand your horizons a bit. Like, and paying for porn does get you the good stuff, whether we like it or not. Like, that's where, because your money is going to the sex worker themselves, which is ethical, but you're also creating, you know, this like cottage industry of like really awesome, like feminist porn, queer porn, indie porn, and like just real stuff. You know, like one of my trips was to the Berlin Porn Film Festival, and I remember just being really shocked by like how gentle and soft and romantic a lot of the films were. And I was like, this isn't porn, because I was used to like mainstream Hollywood porn. And you're just gone, it's totally different, and different body shapes, and, you know, different genders, different sexualities, different ways to have sex, and even things like, you know, someone struggling to have an erection. I was like, I have never seen that in porn.
Porn, really?
Yeah. And it's just like, it was just lovely, because they were like, do you want to stop? Do you want to carry on? And he's like, no, we'll just do something else. And then his erection came back later. And it's just like,
what was the thing, just out of curiosity? Right. What was the thing that got him to relax?
I forget. I think he went down on the partner or something like that. It was in a Crash Pad series. So go check that out. Really good stuff. But I mean, that's real life though, isn't it? It's not all like gigantic erections that don't stop for 12 hours, you know, and... You know, most people don't want that. That's fine.
But what about, what about in terms of just like the positives of you're on your own masturbating and you use porn as an assistant?
I mean, there's mixed, but that's where like the sketchy science comes in about like what's that doing to you, because what kind of messages are you taking on? But I mean, a lot of the science from what I can see is that like if you're a violent misogynist asshole, you're going to be a violent misogynist asshole after you watch porn as well. So the porn isn't the thing that makes you that way. That's something that's in you already due to like upbringing, religion, culture, general asshole behavior, that kind of thing. But again, yeah, like we don't talk enough about masturbation in this country because, you know, history of everything. So if you're masturbating and you're finding stuff that you like and you're having orgasms, I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yeah. Because I see stuff basically saying that there's been an increase in erectile dysfunction, coincidentally enough. And then people do make a lot of assumptions about the way that people are having sex now. Like, there's a lot of anecdotal stuff, more choking, more men, you know, so there's assumptions that men expect different things, that anal is normal, you know, so, yeah. So we're switching into the negative, of course.
Yeah, of course. And there is a lot of negative. Like the erectile dysfunction thing is a really interesting one, because it's not generally just one factor sometimes. Again, it might be a health thing. Like, are you eating? What kind of diet are you eating? What kind of health impacts? Like, stress really impacts your erections as well. And we live in a stressful time, especially, you know, if you're a millennial living in Ireland and you can't find a house or a job and, you know, life is kind of crap a lot of time, you have that stress, and stress affects your sex life, and it affects your stress drive or your sex drive, how much you want to have sex, your ability to orgasm, all those kind of things. But porn is an easy option, because rather than address all those really complicated factors that you might not have any power over addressing, you can go, oh, porn made me have an erection, lose my erection.
Interesting.
No, it's a kind of lazy scapegoat answer sometimes, because it's a lot of work to do the underlying thing. Or maybe you're not having the kind of sex life that you really want to have, and you don't have the skills and the language and the tools and the partner to actually make that happen. It's easier to just like keep the anger inside of you. And as Irish people, we're really good at that. We're really bad at going to therapy and getting our emotions out there. We'll just keep it inside and we'll drink loads of alcohol, which again doesn't help erections as well. So, and you've got all those different factors.
And it's not just Irish people. Like, it was so nice moving over here and meeting people who aren't originally from New York, but who come from like you know, like so many different cultures, who feel the same, who are brought up the same.
And shame is a huge thing. Like, it's just, if you're internalizing all that shame, that's going to come out in your sex life, you know, and it's just so much. And yeah, the choking thing, the anal thing, yeah, like, porn's not meant to be sex education, but people are having sex and they're watching a lot of porn from a young age, which, like, shouldn't be the case, but it is the case because kids have smartphones. But when you're not having, like, normal conversations in sex ed by saying, hey, this is like how we respect each other during sex. Like, if we had decent conversations about consent and respect and kindness and compassion, you wouldn't just be like choking someone without their consent. Do you know, like, you ask. Some people are into it, some people aren't. Yes. But if you're just grabbing someone and choking them, or, you know, having anal without consent, That's not a straight up rape anyway.
Yeah,
that's sexual assault. And we're not naming it as that. We're just going, oh, porn is making boys do this. And we're like, going, no, no, no. Boys are choosing to commit sexual assault or whatever gender it happens to be. And it's like, that's what the conversation has to be. Like, call it what it is, you know?
Yeah.
But I definitely think the choking, this is just the only anecdotal thing in my limited research. I feel like choking has become more of a thing in the last 20 years.
Well,
no, that must have something to do with porn.
And it's without consent, because it's happened to me a few times.
I mean, it's never been without consent with me. In fact, it's only ever been from a request from a woman. But what I mean is nobody ever talked about that or requested that.
Yeah. And it's like, it is shown in porn, but porn cuts out all the like hours of negotiation beforehand and, you know, the contracts.
Yeah, and the journey to that, which is like, we've been dating for years and now we're trying something else. You know, it's just the assumption of like, random woman loves a fucking hand on the neck.
Yeah. Like if you're getting paid an extra $150 for choking in porn, that's not shown on screen, you know, or whatever it happens to be. So people are just assuming, but there is like, there just is a level of misogyny, like call it what it is, of going, I'm going to choke someone with their consent and scare them and possibly injure them and hurt them. And it's like, that's not healthy, you know? And if you like, if you want to do consensual choking, the key is in the word consensual there, you know, like talk to the person, ask them, are they into it? Learn how to do it properly so you're not actually causing someone harm or breaking any little bones in their neck.
Yes.
I mean, that's like sex ed 101, but we just don't have that.
So, but those conversations surely are more important because of porn. I mean, that is one thing for sure.
Important.
I think more people know about that now because of it. So therefore, you have to address it. You can't pretend it's not there.
No. And that's what we still do in Ireland, especially, you know, we're still sticking our heads in the sand and we'll go, oh my God, porn is bad. And then we'll just forget about it until the next conversation.
But it is kind of like, you know, let's say for women anyway, and when we watch rom-coms, it gives us a sort of not the right expectations of how like love is or whatever, but it's the same, just that conversation has to be had with porn, that like, yeah, it's like, or like, you know, like we watch murder shows or, you know, anything, just knowing that it's not real.
Absolutely. And we need to have such conversations about what a healthy relationship is, because Hollywood is not really showing that a lot of the time. And I had a conversation with my friends the other day about Sex and the City and how we look back and it was like Carrie and Big is the big love story. And it's like, he was an emotionally abusive asshole who gave her crumbs and she scattered for like however long, what was it, 10 years the show went on for or whatever. And like, you know, she dropped this like lovely healthy relationship with your man
Aiden.
Aiden. Yeah. And like, she dropped that to go cheat on him with this asshole who was like, right, thanks for the sex, fuck you.
Yeah.
You
know?
But the like, problem is so many people identify with that.
Yeah. Totally. Like, I thought that was what relationships were growing up. I didn't have any positive role models around like healthy relationships or consent or sex or anything like that. So it's like, you know, we need to move that conversation on. And we've had that a little bit with normal people. You know, this was the most recent example. And they talked about, oh, it's great that consent was depicted in it. And it's like, yeah, but we also didn't have conversations about the domestic violence that was also depicted in the show. So can we continue that conversation on rather than go, oh, there's consent. Okay, great.
Well, I will say this. I don't know, like, if it's still the same, but I know when I was growing up, because I had so much guilt and shame, I would want a guy to convince me into having sex so that I wouldn't feel bad about it, which isn't right. But that's kind of the roles that were played. The guy would know, like, you'd be like, oh, you're only coming back for tea. And he would like, okay. But he would know to kind of convince you into not having tea and having sex. And it was only when I moved over here that if I said that to a guy, they'd be like, okay, yeah, we're not coming home. And I'd be like, wait, what's going on? Oh, it's a little different. And it's like, oh shit, yeah, actually,
yeah,
someone shouldn't have to feel like they have to convince, or I shouldn't have to feel like I need to be convinced to not feel guilt
or play that game. Yeah. Well, it's like Irish people and food, you know, you have to be offered like 3 times before it's polite that you take their food, or you know. But that's that general idea of like sex is something men do to women, you know, for being very hetero here, of course. But like, and so women are more passive and men are the doers and the actors. And it's like, well, that's nonsense. You know, like that's not a thing. So again, better sex education would hopefully offset some of those like ridiculous gender roles, you know?
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting, because I didn't think we'd chat about that. But I'm quite curious about that, is how do you change this discussion of the man push, you know, the man pushes. But I mean, in fairness, all consent conversations, and certainly in terms of heterosexual relationships, are about the woman giving consent to the man. I mean, that is the discussion.
It's like women are like the gatekeepers of sex. And they have, and that's where incels come from as well. So we need to have that conversation as well. But again, that all goes like right back to teaching kids about like respect, consent, and kindness from a young age. And you ingrain that into people of going, you don't touch other people without consent, regardless of gender. You don't like pull someone's hair to show them affection in the playground. Yeah. You don't hug people without their consent. All those things. And if you start that at a young age, then those basic principles of human relationships are hopefully ingrained in people. And then when you add sex into the mix at an appropriate age, like teenage years, then hopefully you apply those same principles. You know, but that goes back to like wider education as well about like women's roles in society and feminism and, like, again, race, class, gender, all those intersections all come into these conversations. And like, we're slowly getting there, but there's still a lot more work to be done. But it's talking and having calm, informed conversations. That's my idea of the key anyway, my ideal world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you also...
It's shocking, isn't it? Because it's like, it's actually rare to have these conversations sometimes, you know, and that's why, like, sometimes it's like we haven't had the opportunity to have that conversation sometimes. Like, if you think back to both your sex educations, I'm sure they were terrible. Mine was terrible. We still have kids coming out of school saying their sex ed was terrible. It's literally insert penis into vagina and you make a baby somehow, you know, somehow that magic combination works. And it's like, there's so much more to that. And like, why aren't we having healthy conversations and throwing in into the mix all those things of race, gender, class, age, all those different things, and learning, you know, some of the conversations we're having now are recognizing that, hey, a 30-year-old man having sex with a 17-year-old, it might be legal, but it's really unethical and there's a massive power dynamic and it's actually abusive if you consider like life histories and, you know, power and positions and stuff. And it's like, we need to have those conversations a lot more and we need to have them now.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Well, that's come up a lot now.
And there is that, like, Twitter, I think I liked the thing with normal people that he just like that he asked and that wasn't seen. Like, because I think a lot of people are like, oh, I don't want to ruin the moment. But a lot of women my age, their first sexual experience was guilted into it or kind of, you know, and you might not have been ready or whatever. But it's only now that we're like, oh, actually, that's it would have been nicer just to be like, whenever you're ready.
Yeah, instead of being for, well, that's the joy of me too, that we finally like started having this conversation, because sex in Ireland is a history of trauma and, you know, not very nice things. So we do need to have this conversation, and that's worldwide as well. It's not just an Irish thing, you know, and having those conversations about, we talk sometimes about recognizing red flags, but we need to recognize what green flags are as well, and what healthy relationships are and like how you should expect to be treated, because when that standard falls short, you can immediately go, oh, hang on.
Yeah.
You should be treated with respect.
That's so great. I have two things to say about that. Firstly, my friend sent me this guy called like the Godfather or something, but it's like an Instagram account where he shows women like what's like green flag and red flag. But I was just reading it the other day and there was like 101 green flags. And I was like, wow, I have dated a lot of people who do not have any of these flags. And then it's just like stuff that you would expect from your friends, but sometimes with your a romantic partner you don't. But then secondly, also for I knew a young boy who was convinced into having sex when he didn't want to. This was I was working in this place, but anyway, so it happens for boys as well. And you know, he was very young and not ready, and it's and the girl had kind of convinced him. So it's like good to also be like, okay, this actually happens. The pressure can be two-sided as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the consent classes that I've taught with the active consent crew that are out in Galway, they do have that mixed gender roles in it. You know, they have you know, they have a gay couple and then they have a woman who coerces a man into sex by saying, oh, like, men always want sex. Like, what's wrong with you? You know, like, are you going to tell your friends that you turned down sex? And it's like, that's a very real conversation that we need to have as well. But we just haven't really focused a lot of the research on that, because traditionally, like, patriarchy is like, men aren't victims. Men want sex. And you can still see this now. If you even look like some, you know, trashy tabloid headlines over like, you know, female teacher seduces, you know, 16-year-old pupil, and it's like, no, like, they sexually coerced them, they didn't seduce them. And then the comments would be like, well, I wish my teacher had done that.
Yeah, it's always, yeah, we actually discussed that before on the podcast. Yeah. It's always a sense that it's kind of good news for a guy.
Yeah, and it's ridiculous. It's not, and so many men suffer in silence then,
yeah,
because they feel like they can't come out and share their stories. And a lot of sexual assault support services are set up to help women you know, and, you know, but obviously that needs to change as well.
But surely, though, it is a bigger, the bigger issue is with women.
Well, statistically, but also we actually just don't know as well, because we don't have that research there to know, like we know sometimes maybe like in different minority groups, it's higher, but like, do we know how many travelers are sexually assaulted? Do we know how many minorities in Ireland? Do we know how many sex workers are assaulted? All those things. And it's like the research just is quite poor. Obviously it's an underreported area as well, but you know, I think legally in Ireland, the definition for sexual assault didn't include men as well. It only looked at like male perpetrator, female victim. Mm. And it's like, obviously that's changed a bit now, thankfully. But yeah, we have a long way to go in that aspect.
And do you think, just bringing it back to the porn thing, let's say like with young boys young people like in their young teens watching porn, do you think that is going to cause issues with them trying to do sexual acts because they're learning from that, yeah, where they haven't even seen normal sex?
I think it's like, porn can be one thing, but if you taught other people to respect other humans around, mm-hmm, you, so that, okay, your friends wouldn't bully you into having sex and wouldn't think you were XYZ if you turned down sex. Do you know, if you were like, oh, I don't want to have sex, and your friends went, oh, okay, friends. That's not porn. That porn doesn't come into that. Yeah. That's just like basic human decency that comes, yeah, into that. So it's, you know, treating people to relate to each other on a basic level of supporting them rather than just being pressurizing.
I guess it's up to the
forward.
Well, I guess it's up to, yeah, the parents then to be like, because they're going to be able to watch it anyway. It's so the internet, to just be like, that's not real.
Yeah. What do you tell parents nowadays about the phones and stuff?
I mean, it's so hard. And I know you guys had Sarah on before, and she's like the queen of this. And I'm, yes, so thankful that her service is here in Ireland. But I think parents are terrified sometimes of how do you talk, because porn just seems like it's absolutely everywhere. And are you aware of that new New Zealand ad that came up with the porn stars who turn up on the family's doorstep?
I saw
it. It's brilliant.
It's brilliant.
It's so good. So Des, I'm not sure, have you seen it?
I have not seen it.
Oh, so it's basically two naked porn stars who turn up at this woman's door, and she opens her, you know, she's in her robe and her cup of tea, and she's like, hi, we just, you know, we're porn stars and your son is a big fan of ours, and he watches us on like his laptop, his phone, his Xbox, and they name like 20 different, you know, places he watches porn. And then the kid comes out and, you know, drops his like laptop or whatever, and he's like 10 or something, and she's like, okay, right, I do actually need to talk to my kid about it.
And
it's like,
oh, very good.
Brilliant, because it just shows the reality of it. I was watching it going, oh, geez, I didn't even think of that place you could watch porn. So it is good, but like, parents do need that support, you know, and that's where you can work together with a school, with community groups to kind of devise programs, you know, like to support parents, because again, parents didn't have good sex education themselves. We can't magically expect them to have the language and the tools to talk to their kids, because it's an awkward conversation. Mm. The general sex conversation, but then when you add in porn, it's like, where do you start, you know? So yeah, again,
I know we had that yesterday. My nephews were over and my sister-in-law's uncle died, and you know, he had a crazy backstory. He went to a seminary. Anyway, there was abuse in the story, so we started talking a little bit about, you know, the fact that he was abused when he was young. And then my nephew's 11, he asked something about abuse, what kind of abuse. And then I don't know if my brother or my sister-in-law was just like, they tried to basically say, and I was like, guys, he's 11. You better tell him what type of fucking abuse it is, because he's definitely at an age where he needs to know that this is something that can happen to people.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then they were like, oh yeah, he was abused by priests.
But like, if you had decent conversations about, hey, you know, like you can name your body parts, you know, and that helps people protect themselves, because you can go, hey, this person touched my, you know, my vulva or whatever it happens to be, and you know that that's wrong. So educating people about healthy touch and, you know, appropriate touch and from who helps protect people down the line, because they can feel empowered to come out against that. So when you have all that foundation of decent conversations about abuse and sex education and bodily autonomy, when it comes to adding porn into the mix, you've already got that good foundation going on. So hopefully it's less awkward and challenging. So yeah, like, I normally direct people to, there's a good website called pornconversation.org, and that's by Erica Lust, who is a feminist porn producer or a director. And that's really good because it's like age 7, you can say this. Age 11, you can say this.
Oh, right. That's brilliant. What's that website?
It's really handy. It's pornconversation.org. So it just, it's like that age appropriate guide of like, parents, you're going to have to say this. Here's a guide. You know, and obviously kids grow and mature differently and stuff, but it's a nice kind of basic guide, you know, going forward. So,
and just, yeah. And taking out the embarrassment as well, because there's a guy who comes to my bar and his son, they were given like a new sex education and he brought in the sheets to show me. But it was like, they even had like the clitoris marked down, and like his son is like 11, I think. But he was like, this is great. Like they had everything detailed, and it's just because then it's like less embarrassed. It's just having like a normal conversation. Like I've never, no one ever told me where the clitoris was until I was like,
I know,
late, like, you know, like 17 or something. I was still like, I'm not really sure where this is.
Like there'll be a lot of happier women down the line because guys will know where it is. So that's like step one. Yeah, you know, it might
be there. Did I ever tell it? Can you guys hear me, by the way? I don't know. I haven't bothered getting. Can you guys hear me right now?
Oh, well, he looks nice when he's frozen.
My computer is being awkward. That's the problem. So yeah.
Oh, we laughed.
You guys chat away. Chat away there, Katie. Chat away. Katie, you chat. You chat.
You're just angrily pointing.
We'll continue to chat while he's trying to figure it out.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
But that's great. Yeah, because I do think a lot of it is, like, even I noticed when I started doing this podcast, like, I felt like a lot of shame just because it was like a sex. And then, like, fast forward a year and a half later, now I'm so comfortable with sex stuff. And, like, it's just once you start talking about it, you're like, oh, it's not. So I think, in relation to porn,
it's normalized.
Kids, yeah.
You know, and and like to have conversations about, you know, sex in neutral terms and in positive terms and in negative terms, to be comfortable with all those things is nice. And, you know, I recognize that's really hard for a lot of people. But again, if you kind of put that effort in to learn and look at resources, and like, I think like things like Teen Vogue are doing amazing work at the moment. Oh, I think really? They had a thing about anal sex and people like lost their minds. But it's like, it's happening to girls, like we discussed earlier, of people just like pulling that on people. Yeah. It's like if you actually give people the information, they can empower themselves to go, hey, I want to do that, or no, I don't want to do that, or here's how this can be done consensually. And you know, so it's lovely, and it just hopefully avoids a lot of trauma when we, you know, grow up. But yeah.
And do you think as well, this is just like something else I read, that like, so, well, I guess that you already said it with misogyny, but I guess if violent people are watching violent porn, do you think then they're more likely to go out and be violent, or they would be anyway?
I think the research on that generally says like that they would be anyway. So, you know, and most people like watching a lot of violent porn, they'll just be like, oh, I don't want to watch this, you know. And but then there's other conversations about the most people who look up violent porn are women, and it's not even that violent. Like violence is a very subjective word, because what's violent to me might not be violent to you, you know. It's a very different thing. But that's women looking it up. But there's so many reasons behind that. Is it like, you know, are they more into it? Are they trying to resolve some trauma? Like what is actually going on? And you don't know until you speak to people and try and communicate as well. And that's sometimes the hardest part of asking someone, hey, why are you into this? Yeah. Most of the time we're like, I don't know. I haven't,
never yuck somebody's yum.
Yeah. You know?
So,
and it's like, that's the joy of porn though. It's like, you know, no matter, as soon as you think you've seen it all, like you really haven't, because sex is so varied, and you know, there's so much to it.
Yeah.
That literally something for everyone.
Well, that's true, because I love gory horror movies, but I'd never murder someone in real life.
Yeah, absolutely.
I get such a kick out of watching like a good head exploding, but I've no intention of exploding people's heads. So I guess that's the other thing as well. Just once people know, like, you can enjoy stuff.
State that clearly. Like, I don't like murdering people like, through their heads.
Imagine now in a few years it comes out, I've been like murdering. No, I'm not really. But they'll be like, oh, well, we had that warning on that podcast.
This is like Exhibit A.
So sorry, I was outside, which I was too far from the Wi-Fi, which is why. But that was happening a lot throughout our conversation. So I would just like to point out, if anybody accuses me of being quiet during the consent section, I was actually talking and you guys were not hearing me. Because they'll be like, oh, Des Bishop got very quiet during the consent section. I'd say he was very uncomfortable during that part of the conversation.
Oh, I think, I don't know. I don't know what you'd be like, but I'd imagine, because you're so easy to talk about sex stuff, I can imagine you just being like the normal people guy. Like, it's so easy just to be like, okay, we can stop whenever you want. You're good.
Well,
great.
What I was trying to say once, as you guys were talking about finding the clit, and I don't know if I've ever told a story on this podcast, but we had halfway decent sex education in New York. But the funny thing was, in the book, they'd had the female and male anatomy, whatever, penis and all that, and the vagina, but no clitoris. But then in the biology book, when they talk about dissecting rats, they had the clitoris on the rat.
Wow.
It's like, why do we need to know where a rat's clitoris is? It's completely useless to us. I'm never going to try to get a rat off. But
that's a very niche audience.
they were trying to tell you where the clit was, but without doing it, obviously.
Yeah,
they're like, we'll show them in biology class and God will still love us.
Yes, sex ed by the back door, no pun intended.
So you also talk a bit about porn addiction, because this is another sort of thing that gets thrown out like it's a thing. And I noticed that you had written basically that there's no solid evidence on that either.
No, it's, again, if you look at the people who are funding those studies, like sometimes it's a lot of psychologists who are running sex addiction and porn addiction retreats for like, you know, 30 grand, you know, for a week and stuff. So, you know, you need to be careful of that. But I think a good example of it was like Harvey Weinstein, after all his many, 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 many crimes became known. He was like, oh, actually, I'm a sex addict, and spent like a week in some clinic in Arizona. And it's like, you're not a sex addict. You're just an abusive, horrible person. So again, it's like that, sometimes it's that lazy kind of catch all rather than saying you have a lot of issues around shame and stigma around sex. And, you know, so porn gets like, it's the lazy scapegoat sometimes,
yes.
You know, rather than actually looking at it. And, you know, I looked at the work at David Lee before I went, Levy. He was giving a presentation. He was saying one of his clients, who his wife was like, you have sex addiction, or you have porn addiction, and like hounded him into therapy. And the reason why he was watching a lot of porn was he was watching the guy in the porn, because he had unresolved issues around his own sexuality. So he was watching it like in the car. I think he probably watched it at work, which, you know, was, you know, not a go anyway. But it wasn't about like the sex, it was about watching the guy. And like he was like, he's like, am I gay? Am I bi? Like, what's going on with me? I'm trying to find out that way. So again, it's like, but that's really hard to do for a lot of people, to come out about who your true self actually is, you know? And I think like there are things like hypersexuality and people having sex for like emotional reasons that,
yes,
you know, they probably shouldn't be. And you're trying to, you know, maybe get validation or heal some kind of trauma by having a bunch of one night stands, because it's a nice high, isn't it? It's like, it's, everyone likes to feel attractive. So if
it releases,
you go out,
all that stuff, right? It releases all the hormones that are...
Absolutely. So if you're like, you know, oh, this guy finds me attractive, I'm going to have sex with him, you're going to have that like nice little high and bubble of like, oh, I feel really good now and everything's grand. And then they go away and you're like, oh, all the issues are still there. I still got to deal with that. And that's where the underlying thing is. It's like, you know, drugs and alcohol and stuff, like, okay, obviously they're like physically addicting substances, but no one takes heroin just for like the laugh, you know. You've got shit that you want to escape,
yes,
from, and you've got other stuff going on in your history, whether that's cultural, religious, emotional, gender-based, whatever it happens to be. And it's like, we're not addressing all those underlying factors. So sometimes it's just really easy to go, oh, it's sex, you know. And
you don't think, you know, if somebody has like obsessive compulsive use of porn, or like a problematic amount of porn watching, that using the addiction model is helpful? You don't think so?
There's two schools of thought. There are some that will say, yes, it is helpful. And there's others that say it's not, and can we treat all the underlying issues? And I think I'd go for that side of things from what I've seen. Like there's things like, you know, people in religious communities have higher rates of self-diagnosed porn addiction.
Right.
And there's like, how much do you watch porn? And they're like, oh, 3 times a week. And to a lot of people, that's not a lot. But for someone growing up in a religious community where you're told that masturbation is a sin, you're going to burn in hell for sex outside marriage, all those things. And if you're watching porn, that's obviously a lot of internalized stuff of like, oh my God, this is a problem, I'm doing this, rather than thinking, well, maybe the religious community is the issue. But that's such a huge question, you know, to look at in amongst yourselves. So yeah, I think people have, you know, engage in sex and watch porn for like a lot of the wrong reasons, you know, bunny quotes are around that, like unhealthy reasons. But addiction, as in addiction to like heroin and alcohol, it's not really the same thing. So I think it's a bigger conversation that needs to be had, instead of having this like nice neat label that we can put on top of it that doesn't really fit.
Well, the media loves it. The media loves it.
Well, because it makes headlines, doesn't it? Porn addiction. It's like this specter of porn that's going to come in and, you know,
destroy
like,
relationships. You
know, yeah. And like make men do bad things. And it's like, well, bad things were done before porn came along. So not necessarily the porn thing. But again, it's like having nuanced conversations. And you don't get that in like a 10-minute news headline about it, you know, or like a Daily Mail article about it. So, you know, sensationalism is not the most healthiest of approaches. So, yeah. It's just, it's frustrating because like, and then you see people who are like, it's dopamine. And it's like, well, how do you know it's dopamine? You know, people are like, oh, I watch porn, I get dopamine. And you're like, oh, so you've managed to identify what the exact chemical is that was released in your brain while you had an orgasm. How'd you manage to do that while you're sitting at home? And how do you not know it's all those other chemicals and brain makeup and you have, but it's, again, it's like, oh, we know a science word.
That word becomes the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So rather than going, okay, I have issues around abuse I suffered when I was five, or I need an emotional validation, or whatever of the 50 million things that it could be. So yeah, it's a complicated area. And I don't think sensationist sound bites do us any favors. So yeah.
But shame is the biggie though, right? It's no Huge. Surprise that they called a great movie about sex addiction Shame.
Yeah, that actually sums it up really well. And yeah, it just annoys me so much because it's like sex is one of the best things when it's consensual and fun and pleasurable and you're doing it on your own terms. And it's like, life is short. Like, orgasms are not bad things. Like, let's have more. We might actually be a happier society.
But, you know, millennia, like thousands and thousands of years of sex being considered a negative behavior.
Yeah. And so how do you actually get the tools to unlearn all of that? Like, it's in your DNA almost.
Yes.
But yeah. So like fucking for freedom might be a good thing.
Fucking for freedom. So, amen, sister. Yeah.
But it's also, it's also as well, like, you know, like I know for me, I used to feel a lot of shame, but it's actually just, I wasn't orgasming. I didn't know how to. And then when I did, I was just like, I felt much better after sex, but it was more just, I was dissatisfied. So I was like, I could get over the shame when I was coming good.
Yeah, and life is too short for bad sex as well. And it's like, yeah, I've been there, done that, and it's just, oh, it's just such a waste, you know. And it's like, this is where good sex ed and good conversations about sex and that like shame busting and stuff comes into things, because that's how you start having good sex.
Yeah, you shared an article, I read it this morning on your Twitter, about porn literacy.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just saying that people talked about it in sex education as well. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, well, it's the same as anything. You don't, you know, I think that quote's gone around a while, but like, you don't teach your kids to drive by showing them the Fast and the Furious and going, that's how you drive, you know. So you don't look at porn and go, that's how you have sex. And like, it's like, most people don't have gigantic penises and have sex for 10 hours and, you know, like all those kind of things. And it's like, just because we don't talk about it, people are like, well, do other people have sex like that? Because like, when else do you see other people's genitals? Do you know, it's either in the showers at school or college, or in bed, or porn, you know. And so, yeah, we've a lot of myth busting to do around that. So, yeah.
Oh, I was just about to ask you something quick there, and I bloody forgot. It was a jokey question too, and it popped out of my head when I was listening to your answer. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah. So anyway, just on the, because you did so much work within the porn industry. And I shouldn't have name dropped my cousin there. That's not fair. But I just had a lot of discussions about it. She did her master's, and she focused on the porn industry. But I'm not quoting her because I don't want to drop her in it. But I feel like she came out of that feeling that largely porn is violence against women. And I remember that she was quoting some Icelandic study, and I don't know if that rings a bell with you, the study that she's talking about, but certainly she stopped watching porn after her work with that.
I mean, I think in Iceland as well, they have a particular, you know, approach to gender and sex and stuff. You know, it's very equal society. I think they voted to like ban strip clubs and stuff at some point. So, you know, I wouldn't surprise me then if you're the type that wants to ban strip clubs, you're going to have a negative view of porn anyway then. So maybe that's like a different cultural thing, you know, like maybe people in Saudi Arabia have like a really negative view of porn as well. So you have to take all those different cultural considerations into effect. But of course there's violence against women in porn and like unconsensual depictions as well. Like, my thing is, like, I'm perfectly fine with, like, porn as a concept. Like, the idea of people having sex on screen for money in whatever way they want, no problem. I think the mainstream industry has a lot of problems.
Yes.
And you know, there's a lot of content that I don't like and I think, oh, this shouldn't be depicted like that. But on the other side, there's like all those other companies that are making really awesome stuff. So when we're talking about porn, we have to be kind of very clear of like, what are we actually talking about when it comes to this conversation? So if you're saying we need to ban porn, it's like, well, what are we banning? Are we banning gay porn? Are we banning females just masturbating on their own? Are you banning hetero porn? Like what's the conversation actually about? So that's really important. But yeah, like there's sometimes like you get that allegation levied against you that like, oh, if you study porn and you don't come out and say, I 100% categorically hate it, then I'm 100% categorically in favor of it. And that's not the case. Like, you know, but there's a lot of newer approaches to porn. Like in the 80s, porn was awful. It was like the Max Hardcore stuff. And he was just like utterly vile. It was like, you know, girls pretending to be children and he was having sex on playgrounds. And it was like they're obviously of age, but it was like designed to just look yes. like pedophilia. And like, thankfully he got locked up for, what indecency or whatever it was. But like I think newer people coming into porn now, there's a lot more female directors making different kinds of content. I think camming is really changing the industry hugely, because that's a lot of women going, why am I giving all these people my money when I can just do this at home with my laptop, you know? And they're making different kinds of content. So I think the industry is really going to rapidly change, and hopefully that old school,
and there seems to be quite a demand. There seems to be quite a demand for that personal connection type stuff.
Hugely. And that's, you know, the industry was kind of dying a death anyway because of piracy and, you know, and because of Pornhub and its affiliates, because, you know, performers weren't getting their money and stuff. But yeah, I think OnlyFans, like people want to watch sex. They want to have sex. They want to view sex. Like sex, that part I don't think is a bad thing. It's just the question of like how it's made. And, but like, again, you're looking at a business under capitalism, aren't you? Of going, like most businesses under capitalism are exploitative. There's violence in a lot of industries, you know, there's like labor conditions aren't the best. So when you're able to seize the means of production, like I, like, you know,
look at you, the fucking Karl Marx, you're the Karl Marx of porn.
Yeah. So it's like,
I know, but even, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, even
it's Tommy. I think it's a really positive thing in a lot of ways. And like, again, it's, you know, everything has its negatives and it has its downside. And actually OnlyFans is like the sex workers who basically set that up are now being kicked off in favor of other people, which is like ridiculous. But yeah.
We won't get into OnlyFans gossip.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Katie? Podcast.
Well, just listening to you, because I guess like, look, I have no interest in really watching porn. I tried it a little bit. It wasn't for me. But also, I'm very imaginative. So who knows in the future, maybe my imagination will run dry. But like listening to you, I'm like, oh, I could see how there should be just like, it just needs more rules or regulations or maybe a model. Or like you said, if people go and watch, if they pay for porn, then that will. Because I don't know if I read it on your page or if I read it on something else. I was like binge reading this morning. But about how that, I guess Pornhub shows, it's majority showing men orgasm, the top the favorite videos. Yeah. So that's, I guess, when you talk about calming girls doing that, it's gonna, they're gonna be showing themselves orgasming. So yeah, that kind of levels out the playing field a little.
I mean, there's also a question like of authenticity, and it's yeah, like for years everyone's like women in porn just fake it, and it's like, well, not necessarily. Like it's just a little bit like harder to see for obvious reasons, you know.
It's hard to get a, there's no cum shot.
Yeah, but, you know, if you break that down, there actually kind of is, like, you know, your chest goes red, like the labia gets engorged. There are signs there, but a lot of men were like, I don't know. Like, women don't look like that when they orgasm. And you're like, because you're not making them orgasm.
I love that you said that, because one time I was having sex with this guy and my chest always goes red when I orgasm. And he was like, oh my God, you're having a reaction. And I was like, no, I'm just orgasming.
You're allergic to coming.
Well, people are allergic to cum. Did you know that? That is the thing, and I feel very sorry for them.
To penis cum?
Sorry. Yeah. Well, yeah, because yeah, you can be allergic to condoms as well, but also to actual semen. So, yeah.
No facials.
No.
Where'd you get the rash? That's terrible.
And I was going to start whatever, using it for the anti-aging cream soon. Oh, I was
planning that. There's always like, you know, those British kind of women's mags, and they always have like the headline, and it's like, I use my boyfriend's jizz for a facial moisturizer. And they're like, there's someone who was saving it up over coronavirus.
Oh, you could sell that on, what is it, Etsy or one of these shops?
Oh, Jesus.
I love it because cum is meant to be anti-aging, but it's like in a little wrinkly bag. And I just love balls as well. It's so funny.
So just to wrap it up, because you've been very gracious with your time.
I know. Thank you.
Do you get much into the debate about, you know, sex workers? Because I see a lot, you know, often there's like a little bit of a split within the feminist movement about, you know, sort of defending sex workers and then other people just considering that all sex workers are being abused.
Yeah, it's
unfortunate, I feel, that blood. that divide happens, you know? I don't know why they can't see both things.
Well, that's the thing. And it's like, if that's what you believe, if sex workers are exploited, then why aren't you like setting up resources to help them then, rather than just calling them horrible names on Twitter and just saying, oh, well, you're all betrayers of the patriarchy. It's like, if you really believe that people in sex work are like abuse victims or whatever kind of victim you want to portray them as, then why aren't you supporting them and helping them, you know, if that's what your whole thing is? But it's like, a lot of sex workers don't need help. You know, they're like, I'm doing this, it's fine, it's grand. And I just don't understand how you could really call yourself a feminist if you're not supporting other women regardless of their choices. Like, you don't have to like sex work, but you don't have to demonize the women that are in it for whatever reason that they're in it. So it's the same with TERFs as well. Like, people, like feminists who are against trans people, I just don't get it. I'm like, why are you just being such an asshole about this? Like, you're causing harm to people. And, you know, in the name of ideology. So it's like, like, you can have your perfect feminist ideology, but the reality is there's not one single strand of feminism. You know, there's multiples. And we see this a lot, like the concept of like white feminism, of like white middle class feminists saying, this is how feminism should be for everyone. And you have black feminists going, none of that is reflective of our reality. So can we get like a seat at the table? And white feminists are like, shh, no, we'll talk on your behalf, which is obviously ridiculous. But you see like power struggles, you know, there's women's organizations in Ireland that have voted to not allow the Sex Workers Alliance like be part of their thing. And it's like, how could you possibly call yourselves feminists if that's the case? And if you do believe they're victims, you're like not allowing victims to speak for themselves, then how is that feminist as well?
It's a contradiction, so, really. Yeah,
absolutely. Like, I just don't get it. And I think there's many ways to be a feminist. And, you know, being a sex worker for, you know, a lot of people, it's like a means of survival. You know, we have to be real here and go, not all sex work is glamorous. And it's not all like, you know, you're earning your like 100 grand a night or whatever happens to be. There's people out on the streets who are like, I need to do sex work because I need a hit, you know, or yes, I need sex work because I need to like spend money to get in a hostel for it tonight. And it's like, those women don't need to be demonized. They don't need to be like called, oh, you're not a feminist because you're doing that. They're trying to just survive, or women trying to put food on the table for their kids. Like, it's just like, to be called like derogatory names by other women claiming to be feminist is the last thing that they need. So it's just ridiculous. So, you know, I just don't see how being so exclusionary is a good thing. It's just nonsense. So, well, yeah,
we have TERF. Do we have an exclusionary name for,
SWERFs.
Oh, SWERFs. That's right. Yeah. I had heard that before.
Wait, what is that? What is that? What is that?
It's sex worker.
Exclusionary radical feminist. The TERFs.
It goes hand in hand, because generally if you like scratch that surface of a SWERF, you'll also find a TERF, and you'll also find people who have been quite vocal about the all lives matter approach.
Really? You think the SWERFs and the TERFs are all living?
No, I can't say like all of them, but I've seen a lot on Twitter where people are like, oh no, we shouldn't be doing this and all lives matter. And you're going, okay, like that's even a massive contradiction in itself. So if you believe all lives matter, but you don't believe sex workers' lives matter or trans people's lives matter. So
is JK Rowling a SWERF as well as a TERF? It's a big question.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm only joking.
But I don't want to get sued.
I had a very funny experience on the beach the other day. So we were on the beach and my friend's daughter was reading Harry Potter. And so we start talking about J.K. Rowling. I said she was a TERF. And then one of the other people was like, what's a TERF? I was like, you don't know what a TERF is? I was like, it's a trans exclusionary radical feminist. And she was like, you're fucking with me. Like, she literally thought, this can't be a thing. And then we started talking about people. I was like, no, they're a TERF. And they were like, fuck off. But it's just funny how once that becomes part of your vernacular, it just seems so normal.
Yeah,
it's just,
and it should be. We should be able to call that out and go, "Hang on, like you're being horrible right now, and you're causing real harm to people." Like someone was some, I don't know what state it was in the States, but some Republican politician dude quoted her speech and why he was blocking some LGBT rights bill, and he was like, "Well, according to J.K. Rowling," and you're like,
"Oh, really?
What?" Yeah, so I'll find that for you. Some Republican guy, anyway. So, right, not that they need much, you know, persuasion. But yeah, it's
that's
just
cool. Thank you so much, because that's come up a few times. But it's hard to, you know, it's hard to get people. A lot of people, like, if you support sex workers, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of people just support sex workers. They don't really engage in the argument from the other side. But it's good because you're really aware. By the way, this is the reason why I was outside the whole time, was because the dog barks in the house, and I had to come back in the house to get better reception. But you know,
normally honestly, I have neighbors screaming.
Flynn,
so it's
Flynn
fine.
Is a fucking Flynn is a swerf. You know, and he's getting very uncomfortable with this conversation. Swerfy, shut up. So anyway, sorry, I'm messing around.
Yeah.
So no. Anything else, Katie, before we go?
No, that was great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. It's always good to have the conversations, because I just think they're just so well needed. You know, it's like, it's the 21st century. Sex is okay.
And if, we'll have you back on one day, maybe for just like a little bit more of an irreverent chat, if you don't mind, like just messing around. I don't mean like saying anything controversial, but we were really trying to grill you about the porn thing, but perhaps you're just such a great guest. Perhaps we'll just have you on. We'll talk about whatever topic.
I'm more than happy. I literally, that's half the reason why I set my podcast. I'm like, I just want to talk about sex all the time. So come on, let's go do it.
Oh, great.
So,
well, we'll have you on again soon then. That's really great.
Thank you.
Happy days.
Well, thank you so much. Well,
thank you.
Caroline, you can head away, and myself and Katie are going to wrap.
Oh, and what's your podcast called again?
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's Glow West, and it's only 11 episodes old, so it's only a tiny baby, but it's hit number one a few times. So
good for you.
I'm excited. I'll listen to it. And is there an Instagram as well? I know I just briefly was on your Twitter.
The Instagram is at Glow West Insta, so all one word. And the Twitter is Glow_West_, because Twitter is a pain in the backside.
But one W though, right?
No, two.
Oh, so Glow West.
Yeah.
And do you have an Instagram that you post on that people can?
Yeah, it's just Dr. Caroline West. And I have a website as well, which is iamcarolinewest.com. So there's like three Caroline Wests involved in the porn industry, and I'm the only sex positive one. So don't mix me up with the other two.
That's so funny, because when I did Google you, I found a few other Caroline Wests, and I was like,
I know. So annoying. And because like, you can imagine if you go to a conference and like we're both there and we mix up the audiences, they're going to have a very...
Change your name to Caroline East.
Yeah,
that was such a bad joke. I'll just leave now. Sorry.
You're banned. You. Katie, you're barred.
I loved it. I haven't talked to my dad in a few days, okay? I had to do a dad joke.
Quarantine joke. Right. Fine.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Caroline, we call you doctor.
Ooh, doctor.
No, like I've literally changed everything. I changed like my Tesco club card. I changed like the electricity bill. I'm like, put doctor in all of that, because I spent 5 years earning it. So
yes, you're dead right.
Yeah.
Bye, doctor.
Okay.
Thanks so much. Thank you for your time. Right. Thanks.
Thanks for you.
See you. Bye bye. So there you go, Katie. It was stressful for me because the sound kept going, and I was wondering, was it coming? So you were getting clear sound the whole time, right?
Yeah. And I didn't even notice you kind of cutting out until one part where you tried to talk. But
I think it was an important conversation because we talked about it a lot. To be honest, you guys are talking about consent, and I was having these technical problems, and I had more questions. But I think we'll actually maybe get her back on to joke around a bit, but also maybe we'll just have a bit of a longer consent conversation, because she was talking about a couple of things related to, you know, stuff that's coming out about Irish comedy, blah, blah, blah. And I just was like, I just wasn't there. It was annoying because it was just like, now I'm going to be perceived as being completely ignoring all that. But we'll have her on again. And
it didn't seem like that from
oh, that's fine. Yeah, that's perspective. Good.
And it was good because I suppose before when I was trying to Google to like, because I just don't know a lot about porn, but there's so many negatives coming up. So it was good to hear her talk about not just negatives. It's so easy to just...
Yeah. Well, anytime I've done any research at all, you see very quickly that the negatives are just assumed as opposed to researched. But a lot of people think that they're just like a given, you know. Yeah. And I think Caroline, I meant to ask her this, but she came to the fore, particularly when they said we need to have a conversation about porn in the doll in Ireland. And then everyone made all these discussions like, but you know, all the discussion was basically like to tell people to be careful, you know, it was all negative, you know. But again, it just comes down to sex always being perceived as a negative thing, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was a great chat.
Yeah.
Don't forget about the Patreon, guys. Katie, push the Patreon.
Please. Yeah, do the Patreon. The episodes are up early. You know, this is going to go straight. I'll just have to edit a bit, but it'll be up
a little bit of editing on this one. My bad.
No, it's fine. But I mean, you know, so what? It's 1:39 p.m. here. So what time is it in Ireland? 5:39. So it'll be up by about at least 6:30.
And
then the other apps don't go up until the morning. So I'm fucking sweating this whole episode as well because I'm in my room and I don't have
air conditioning.
Not in my bedroom. We only have it in the kitchen. Oh, so the whole time I was like melting.
Well, I was outside. I was comfortable, but I have air conditioning in here.
Yeah
so anyway, give us some comments at Des Bishop, at Katie Boyle Comics, Spotify screenshots. We'll be
leave
back.
Nice reviews, you fuckers.
Katie, stop fucking getting in your head about the bloody reviews.
Well, yeah, we got a funny review of someone being like, I can't believe you left us left us hanging with Blurry from last episode, and I'm gonna do it again.
Oh, I forgot about that.
That was fine.
We'll talk about that next week.
Yeah, we will. I've loads.
No, that was a good app. She messaged me out of the blue. It was actually Dr. Oh, now I know she's got a new podcast. That's interesting, because and people do go listen to her podcast. But I was like, wow, that's great. She messaged me and said, hey, do you want to do the podcast? And I was like, awesome, you know. Because I had sort of forgotten that we had teed it up right at the beginning of the pandemic, right after I talked to Sarah. And now I realize, of course, it's good promo for our podcast, which I'm delighted with. You know, I'm delighted that she reminded me and she was a great guest. So, that's it. We'll see you guys next week. And that's it, right, Katie?
Yeah. Love yous.
Bye.
Bye. Hold
up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.